listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. New research out on libertarians, also known as the wealthy white frat boy wing of the GOP. I got to share that with you. Dick Cheney is going to Canada, apparently tomorrow or the next day. This will be entertaining. There is a petition to the Attorney General of that country and to the Chief of Police in Toronto, I guess it is, in Toronto or Montreal, to do what Kuala Lumpur did, hold a war crimes trial. Somehow I'm skeptical. The head conservative over at American Enterprise Institute, the head guy, the president, Arthur Brooks, who has been on this program, we debate American Enterprise people regularly, has come out in favor of the social safety net, and Harry Reid let the Republicans just vote against themselves in the United States Senate, what has to be the most embarrassing vote in the history of the Senate for the Republican Party. I'll tell you about that in just a minute. There's a lot going on. Renee Davis from the parent with the Hunter Schools program. We are doing our fundraiser for the Hunter School, hunterschool.org, just a heads up on that throughout this week, all 3 hours of the program. Robert Greenwald is going to be with us in the next hour to talk about the drone wars and a new movie he has out. Norman Solomon is going to drop by in our third hour, the founder of the Institute for Public Accuracy. And right now, Congressman Jared Polis is with us. He is he so ably represents the 2nd District of Colorado and is a member of the House Progressive Caucus. Polis, P-O-L-I-S, .house.gov is his website, his campaign site, polisforcongress.com. And Congressman Polis, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. It's a pleasure to be on. And, you know, we really appreciate when you mention a campaign site like that. That's always welcome. It's not always done, so thank you.
Please to help. I'm never quite sure when it's, within the window of you can do this and you can't, all that kind of stuff. But I figured, I know we're not in a campaign right now, so I figured it was safe.
Sadly, it's always a campaign, but
that's a whole other conversation. Is doing something about this bizarre Supreme Court theory that the property, money, is the same thing as speech. But speaking of the public will, I guess, which is a subset of that, the public will in Colorado was to decriminalize pot, Washington State too, even for recreational use. And I've been saying for years on this program that if the Democratic Party would adopt something, there's a couple of policies that are my favorites, and I won't go through them all with you because we may have areas of disagreement, but this or agreement, who knows? But in any case, this one in particular, decriminalizing, at least for medical use, at the very least, on a national basis, decriminalizing marijuana and regulating it like alcohol, they would, we've got this, 15, 16, 20% of Americans roughly who identify themselves as libertarians. I've always said libertarians are just Republicans who want to smoke dope and get laid. And you would, I think you'd take their thunder away, and I think the Democratic Party would never again lose an election. And your thoughts on that?
Well, I agree. I certainly have many libertarian-minded constituents who support me because of that stance, and you're absolutely right. It just doesn't make sense to have this massive criminal enforcement apparatus around something that by all objective measurements is roughly as harmful as alcohol. So, I mean, it should be regulated, in my opinion, and also in the opinion of voters of Colorado, a lot like alcohol is regulated. It just makes sense increasingly to the population as a whole, but certainly as a voting issue to many people who are more libertarian-minded.
Yeah, I agree. I would argue that it's probably less destructive than alcohol. We have 50,000 Americans who die from alcohol related alcohol overdose, alcohol toxicity, cirrhosis.
Well, and that's very true. You know, I represent the district that is University of Colorado Boulder, Colorado State University. Tragically, almost every year there is a death or multiple deaths from alcohol poisoning. It is the saddest thing. You know, we're talking about 18-year-old, 19-year-olds. I do not remember a single death from marijuana poisoning. I don't even know if that exists.
It has never happened in the history of the United States.
And yet every year, one, two, five kids die from alcohol poisoning.
Yeah, and that's just in your area. I mean,
in two colleges, yeah.
Yeah, nationwide, it's happening roughly daily. And so this is pretty straightforward stuff. And it's surprising when you look at the numbers how many Republicans are agreeing with this, and maybe it's the libertarian wing, but what are your thoughts on how this could be taken to the Democratic Party, or if it could? I realize that there are some very, very powerful forces that fund both parties, you know, the alcohol lobby, the tobacco lobby, who seem interested in keeping pot off the market. On the other hand, given how many alcohol and Tylenol together, for example, is the main cause of liver transplants in the United States, which are incredibly expensive. If you want to talk just about raw healthcare costs.
You know, I think, frankly, the Democrats have evolved tremendously on this issue. There were always some Republicans, you know, whether it's in Congress, people like Ron Paul or libertarian-minded Republicans supported it. But it has become, on the Democratic side, certainly in the state of Colorado, but I think other states nationally as well, the mainstream position. As an example, marijuana legalization is in our state Democratic Party platform. Right. Almost all of the members of our state assembly who are Democrats support it. So, I mean, it is real. And here in the House of Representatives, it's also become the accepted or the general position that most Democrats have. And, of course, you can find a handful that oppose it. But the majority of Democrats here support allowing.
So what's it going to take to get it written into the party platform for the 2014 elections? Because I think this would pick up. I think this would energize a lot of young people. Frankly.
It should. And frankly, we'll need, a presidential candidate that's open to it.
So that would put it in 2016.
President Obama has evolved on this issue. He ran on keeping it illegal, but he's been open to allowing Colorado and Washington to continue on our path. But, you know, frankly, I think we need to go further. We need to make it clear that there should not be a federal ban. That doesn't mean it's going to be legal everywhere, Tom. I mean, plenty of states, and even in a state, we have counties in Colorado and cities that won't have it legal. That's fine. There's dry counties that don't allow alcohol in Texas and Tennessee and other states. There's no problem in the world with that, but it's a matter for local control, not for the federal government to dictate.
Right. So really, this is kind of a reverse Jeffersonian, not even a reverse, this is a Jeffersonian argument.
Well, I think Thomas Jefferson grew hemp.
Yeah, as a matter of fact. Well, actually, we know George Washington did, definitely, because that was in his diary. But the argument that, you know, the local control is the best, and that the federal government should only get involved when it really, you know, when it's really important stuff that has to do with the commons. And, you know,
it's very true. I mean, why would the federal government in Washington, why would politicians be telling you, you know, what you smoke? I mean, it just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't mean it shouldn't be. There shouldn't be some degree of, you know, regulation to keep it out of the hands of kids, all those
sure.
things that, of course, we do with alcohol. But it should be an approach consistent with the way we deal with alcohol, not the way you deal with heroin or cocaine, which are totally different things.
Yeah, I agree. You can grow this stuff in your backyard. I mean, we're talking about a weed here. This is kind of crazy.
And Coloradans are already allowed to grow up to 5 plants for their own use in their own home and have been for close to a year.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. That's extraordinary. That's, you know,
It's been a boom for gardening stores and grow lamps and all those things. Oh, my gosh, they've been springing up everywhere, Tom.
It helps the economy. And if you started taxing it, I mean, I remember years ago we took our kids to, not so many years ago, and all of our kids were over 21 at the time, we took our kids to Holland to, Amsterdam for Christmas. And we went to this fancy restaurant right across the street from the Rijksmuseum, you know, a 5-star restaurant, white linen tablecloths. And the waiter brought over the wine menu and the pot menu. And it was like, whoa. First time we ever had that conversation with our children, by the way. A whole other conversation. But it was very interesting. But they, you know, they make money off it. They tax it. So.
And then so will our state, and so will Washington, and it's going to help pay for some school construction and really help be a contributor to society rather than something that detracts from it and creates crime and creates gangs.
Yeah. Well, I realize this is not the only issue on which you're doing just absolutely great work, both in the Progressive Caucus and in the House of Representatives, but thank you for coming on the program and talking about it.
Thank you, Tom.
Congressman Jared Polis. Well, check out his website, Polis for Congress, P-O-L-I-S-F-O-R, congress.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And speaking of pot and libertarians, I got to tell you all about this study right after this. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Andrew Campbell, the senior producer with The Big Picture, is on the line with us. Hey, Andrew, how you doing?
Hey, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Lynn Paltrow is going to help open the show this evening. This is a fascinating story.
Yeah, she is the executive director of the National Advocates for Pregnant Women, and she's also co-attorney for Alicia Beltran, Viewers might remember last week we touched briefly on Alicia's story. She's a woman from Wisconsin that was forcibly locked up in and held against her will in a drug treatment facility after she told social services workers that she was a recovering drug addict. She had no drugs in her system at the time. She had been clean for a very long time, yet she was still forced against her will to seek treatment, even though she didn't need it.
Because she was pregnant.
Yeah, and this all has to do with Wisconsin's fetal protection law, and it's a very scary law, and it's actually replicated itself in four other states, so we're going to talk about that with Lynn as well.
Yeah, and then that, of course, is going to lead to the Lone Liberal Rumble, where Horace Cooper and Chris Allman are going to drop by.
Yeah, we have Horace and Chris on, so it should be pretty fiery. We're gonna touch on Alicia's story as well, and get into why are old white men so concerned about women's private parts in America, to start things off. And then we're also going to talk about gun violence a little bit. There is a group of domestic violence survivors that are coming to Capitol Hill this week to talk about sensible gun reforms, and they're really stressing the fact that just because you put a gun in someone's hand, in this case in an abused woman's hand, doesn't mean she can protect herself. In fact, statistics show that if an abused woman has a gun in the house, or there's one in the house of the couple, it's far more likely that she'll be shot because of it.
Yeah, and this is, you know, the more guns you have, you know, an armed society is not a civil or a polite society, as the NRA bumper sticker used to read. In fact, it works just exactly the other way around.
Yeah, more guns is not the answer, no matter what the NRA wants to tell us.
Yeah. Other topics?
We'll get into a little bit about two bills that are being considered by the House of Representatives this week that no one's talking about, but they should be, because one of them, 70 of the 85 lines in the bill was written by lobbyists for Citigroup, one of the largest banks in America. And basically, they eat away at the Dodd-Frank law even more than it's already been ate away at. And it's another huge win for banks. But, I mean, how are we letting, literally in this case, how are we letting a Wall Street bank write our laws?
Yeah, it's nuts.
Yeah.
It really is. And then an open letter to Jay-Z. Tell me about this in our blog.
Yeah, we're going to have Rashad Robinson on. He's the executive director of Color of Change, and he's going to be talking about, it's been the news lately, there are allegations of racism at Barney's and actually at Macy's in New York City, two of the largest department stores in the country. And he sent an open letter to Jay-Z. Jay-Z has been considering affiliations and working with Barney's, and he's faced a lot of backlash because of that, so we'll get into that.
Mm-hmm. And what's the essence of the open letter?
Basically urging Jay-Z not to pursue business relations with these two corporations that are
That's very interesting.
Racism.
Now, Barney's is saying that it wasn't their guy who busted these two African-Americans who went shopping there, that in both cases it was, you know, private security outside, local cops, that kind of thing.
Sounds a little fishy to me. I don't know about you.
Yeah, okay. I don't know. I just don't. Andrew Campbell, thank you so much, Andrew.
Thanks, Tom.
For a glimpse into tonight's big picture, 7 o'clock Eastern time, and whatever time that may be, wherever you are. I'll be right back. Occupy the media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. Tom Hartman here with you. And this week we're trying to raise, so far we've raised about $3,000. And Lori on the air yesterday said that $10,000 would be great. I would like to set a goal of $20,000 or $30,000, frankly, but because we want to put new roofs on four houses. We have to put a new roof on one house. That's going to be what, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000? It's been a while since I bought a roof. We need generators for each of the buildings. We need to put a new kitchen both in Mountain House and in the school. And we need to pave the driveway. And this is about a quarter mile long driveway on the side of a mountain that's a dirt road right now that keeps washing out. And then on top of that, we'd like to paint the outside of the school building. So if you can help, you know, we still have at the very least $7,000 to go and 3 days to do it, today, tomorrow, the next day. So if you could call 800-897-8358. Start over on that. 800-897-8358. If you could call that number and make a contribution to the Hunter School, and you can also do it on their website at hunterschool.org. They take PayPal and they take credit cards. And it's 100% tax deductible. It's a 501c3 charity, or your normal, regular, tax-exempt school organization. The Hunter School and the Salem Children's Village, salemchildrensvillage.org and hunterschool.org are the websites. So if you want to see what they're up to and what they're doing. And, in fact, in the second hour of our program today, we're going to talk with the parent, a parent of one of the kids at the Hunter School, who will tell you about her experience there and her son's experience there. So please consider giving them a call at 800-897-8358, 800-897-8358. Okay, the most embarrassing vote of the year. I am just astounded. It's like Harry Reid dared the Republicans to do it. I mean, is that, or did they ask him to do it because they needed to basically have something for their own campaign commercials? Because, you know, a third of the Senate is up for re-election in 2014. A third of the Senate is up for re-election in 2016. I mean, these two elections are relatively close in terms of election time now in the era of the nonstop campaign. Speaking of which, just a slight digression here for a moment, but it looks like Ken Cuccinelli. This is so bizarre, you know, Ken Cuccinelli, who wants to shrink government down to the size where it will fit in a woman's uterus. I mean, he literally, you know, no abortion, even in cases of rape or incest, no birth control pills. And the guy that's running with him for attorney general, he sponsored legislation that says that if you had a miscarriage, you have to turn yourself into the police within 24 hours or you face a year in jail if you're a woman. Now, if you're a man, I guess if a woman doesn't turn herself in, you would be guilty because she's committed a crime by not turning herself in, and it's a crime not to report a crime. So I guess, you know, husbands, boyfriends, sons, fathers would be also legally responsible and could go to jail as well if the woman in their family who had the miscarriage did not call the police. I'm not making this up. This is the guy, Senator, what is it, Obershane is his name? Or Mark Obershane. Thank you, Jim. Yeah, that's right. You live in Virginia, don't you, Jim? Senator Obershane sponsored legislation. And I can tell you, I mean, just from personal experience, and you know, we've talked about this before, so I know that this is okay with Louise for me to mention, but after our first child was born and before our second child was born, Louise had a miscarriage at about, I don't know, 2-3 months. It was fairly early on, but she knew she was pregnant, and then she had the miscarriage, and she was really looking forward to having a kid. And it's devastating, you know, both, especially to the women, but, you know, I was not pleased about it either. I mean, ultimately, you look back on it and you figure, okay, if the body miscarries, it's for a reason, you know, that there's something wrong with the fetus and it's like this is the body doing its normal thing. But it's really hard to tell yourself that when it's going on. It's more like, oh, my God, I just lost a baby. And the guy, the Republican who's running for Ken Cuccinelli's job right now in the state of Virginia, proposed legislation that when a woman is going through this, she has to turn herself into the police. Presumably so they can make sure that it's actually a miscarriage and wasn't an abortion. And that, therefore, if it was an abortion, she could be prosecuted. And what, she's supposed to, what, save it or something? I mean, you know, it's which gets into some really gooey stuff, but it's just, it's bizarre. And so here, you know, you've got Cuccinelli and Obershane. You've got these guys running who literally, well, not literally, but metaphorically want to shrink. Why is it that white men are so obsessed with women's genitals? Why am I asking that question? Come on, the answer is obvious. The better question is, why is it that white men are, at men in general, but in this case, this seems to be a strand of older white males in the Republican Party who call themselves either conservatives or evangelicals, who are obsessed with women's reproductive systems. They want to shrink government down so it's small enough that they can fit it into a woman's uterus. They don't want it, you know, they don't want it regulating the Koch brothers factories. They don't want it in the smokestack of the Koch brothers factories. They don't want it, or refineries. They don't want it in the bookkeeping room of the banks in Wall Street. They don't want government, but they do want it inside the uterus of every woman in America. It's bizarre. Anyhow, it looks like Ken Cuccinelli has reduced the margin in his race against Terry McAuliffe in Virginia to the point where possibly, when you add it to the 50-some-odd thousand people that he has purged from the voting rolls in the last week, and yeah, he's the attorney general, so he's the guy in charge of this, and he's the guy who settles any election disputes, like who gets to vote and who doesn't, and who actually voted for somebody, that Ken Cuccinelli might actually steal this election. The same way George W. Bush did in Florida in 2000, you know, when his brother Jeb knocked 80,000 African-Americans off the voting rolls just, you know, a couple of weeks before the election. African-Americans who actually were legally entitled to vote. They just happened by coincidence to have names that were similar to those of felons in Texas. And that got George W. Bush within close enough range that he could take the thing to the Supreme Court and have them appoint him president.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
But in that digression, I'd never finished telling you about this incredibly embarrassing vote in the United States Senate, which I'll tell you about when we come back. We'll pick up your phone. Welcome back, Tom Hartman. Now, before I get to the issue of the incredibly embarrassing vote that they had in the Senate today, or maybe it was yesterday, whenever it was, it was, you know, I raised this issue before the break about Mr. Obenshane, who is running for Attorney General of Virginia, the Republican senator from Virginia, state senator who's running to become the Attorney General to replace Ken Cuccinelli. Ken Cuccinelli, of course, running for the governorship against Terry McAuliffe, who seems to be beating him, but Mr. Cuccinelli has succeeded in knocking some 50,000 people off the voting rolls just in the last week or so. And we know how that, you know, we saw that movie played out in 2000 in Florida. So who knows? But I asked the question semi-rhetorically, but I think it's actually a legitimate, serious question. And that is, you know, operating on the premise that the Republican Party does not want the government to be so large that it can fit into the smokestacks of the Koch brothers' refineries. It does not want the government to be large enough to fit into the offices of Goldman Sachs and regulate their banking activities. But so they want to shrink it down to the size where, I mean, Grover Norquist famously said, I don't want to destroy government. In fact, we used to have the clip of it. I don't know if you've got that. He said it on NPR to Mara Liasson. He said, I don't want to destroy government. I just want to shrink it down to the size of where I can drown it in the bathtub. You know, make it small enough that I can drown it in the bathtub. And or out of a drain of the bathtub or something like that. But it appears that what these guys seriously want, you know, whether it's Governor Ultrasound, who wanted to force an ultrasound wand up into the vagina of and against the uterus of every woman in the state of Virginia who wants to have an abortion, or whether and make no mistake about it, that's forced. That's literally at the point of a gun if you object. And I think in most places they call that rape. Or whether it's Senator Obenshane, who wants to have Ken Cuccinelli's job, who suggested that any woman who has had a miscarriage should immediately, must, under penalty of going to prison for a year, must report herself to the local police department, not a hospital, a police department if she has a miscarriage. What causes these typically older white men to want to have such control over the reproductive functions of women? Is it some kind of just fundamental sexual insecurity? Oh, it's too small. Well, maybe I can pretend it's bigger by controlling these women. Is it that? Or is it misogyny? Is it just a, you know, fundamental hatred of women? The first girlfriend they had broke their heart, or they didn't like their older sister, or their mom used to beat them. Who knows? I mean, or just, you know, or is it even deeper than that? And I suspect it is, frankly. My personal opinion on this is that women are the ones who have the genuinely sacred power. They bring life into the world. And when you look around you at the natural world, what you see is the celebration in nature, essentially of the feminine. Pretty much everything we eat, you know, corn, wheat, these are seeds. These are the eggs. These are the ova of plants. These are from the female parts of the plants. Flowers are the female parts of the plant, while the male part is the pistils and the stamen is the female. In any case, whatever it is, I can't remember pistils and stamens, but the flowers are there to facilitate reproduction. The fruits and vegetables that we eat, arguably root vegetables aren't so involved in reproductive function, although what they do is they store enough energy that in the second year, a biennial plant with carrots and potatoes and things like that, a biennial plant in the second year has enough energy stored in the ground that it can throw out flowers so it can reproduce. So basically the world is alive. The world, I mean, you know, the natural world is like a giant mother. It's this feminine power and principle that just drives everything. And men just, you know, what pollen does, what sperm does, what the male function does is it basically just flips that on in a way that, you know, moves DNA around and in ways that further the survival of species. But, you know, arguably, men are not all that necessary. In fact, the more advanced science becomes, the less necessary men become. And I think that that's the reason why you've seen these eruptions, and we're in the tail end of what I believe is a 7,000-year-long eruption of male insanity, of men dominating women, men dominating other men in order to dominate their women, war. I see all this stuff I see as insanity. And you look at the Iroquois Confederacy here in North America. Ben Franklin introduced 34 Iroquois elders to the Constitutional Convention in the summer of 1787 in Philadelphia. And they spent a couple nights up on the second floor sleeping there. And they blessed our, you know, the people, the men who had gathered to write our Constitution. And he said, and I'm doing this from memory, so it's imperfect, but it's close to what he said. He said, and back then, ignorant savages was not considered a slur, so he was speaking highly of these folks. He said, if five nations of ignorant savages have been able to forge a bond that has lasted in peace for 1,000 years, then certainly 13 colonies of educated Englishmen can do the same. It's Ben Franklin. Now, what Ben Franklin knew, but he didn't talk about, and Jefferson knew, and he actually writes about in his diaries, is that four out of the five nations of the Iroquois Confederacy did not allow men to vote. And they lived in peace for a long, long time. They had figured it out. They resolved their conflicts by playing lacrosse. Literally. I mean, there's a painting just in the National Gallery, just a few blocks from here. Huge painting. I forget the artist's name. He's a kind of semi-famous 18th century painter, or maybe early 19th century painter, of an Iroquois, quote, battle. 10,000 Iroquois, the men, out there. And it looks like a war, except there's no blood because they're playing. It was a four-day lacrosse game to resolve a dispute between two tribes. It's really pretty amazing. So I ask you, what do you think? Why are these guys so, you know, why would Senator Obenchain, who wants to be the Attorney General of Virginia, this Republican, why would he sponsor a law saying that if a woman has a miscarriage, she must report herself to the local police department within 24 hours, and if she fails to, she faces a year in prison? Why would he do that? I think there's something very deep in our culture that drives this kind of bizarre behavior, and it's something that we need to heal. So anyhow, the most incredibly embarrassing vote, and I'll pick up your calls here. And just a reminder, speaking of nurturing, the Hunter School and the New England-Salem Children's Village. We're doing a fundraiser for them this week, and we're trying to raise $10,000 for a couple of new roofs for school, for their houses and generators and a driveway. It's 800-897-8358, 800-897-8358. I realize it's not real glamorous, the stuff that we're raising the money for, but it really is. And you'll find out about that, I think, at 420 Eastern time, when Mrs. Davis is going to be with us, the parent of one of the kids who's in the school. Anyhow, here's the vote that the Republicans... Now, what I don't know is the backstory of this vote, and I'd love to find out. I'm going to try and track it down. You'll recall back on October 16th that 27 Republican senators voted to raise the debt limit, right? In the Senate, they did the adult thing. They said, raise the debt limit. And it went over to the House, and the House said, okay, you know, we'll go along with it. We won't blow up the world's economy over Obamacare. So Harry Reid allowed a vote yesterday, which has no, it was a meaningless vote. It was a symbolic vote. You can express your dissatisfaction with the October 16th vote. You could say, I think the October 16th vote was a stupid vote. Who was, what kind of jerk would, as they say over at Democratic Underground, what kind of jerk would vote to raise the debt limit? Those idiots should be fired, right? That essentially was the vote. Do you agree with that? That it was a stupid vote on October 16th? And all 45 Republican senators voted yes. We disapprove of the October 16 vote, including all 27 of the senators who voted to raise the debt limit. Yes, we are voting to say that we were stupid 2 weeks ago. This has got to be the most embarrassing vote in the history of the Senate. Anyhow, back with your thoughts on the issues of the day, pot in Colorado, across the country. Obamacare, Kathleen Sebelius being grilled today by the Republicans. I've got some thoughts on that, too, on a show after this.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
The New England-Salem Children's Village and the Hunter School, 800-897-8358. 800-897-8358. Welcome back. And Judy in Bailey, Colorado. Hey, Judy, thanks for watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV. What's on your mind?
You're welcome. It's actually on Dish, but it's the same.
Close enough.
Representative Polis forgot to mention that the tax on marijuana is going to be 25% the first year, and then they can, because it'll be put into the state constitution, they'll be allowed to raise it every year.
Mm-hmm.
And that same thing goes with Amendment 66 that's supposed to go to schools.
Right.
But it'll go into the state constitution. They'll be able to raise taxes without asking us every year.
Well, here's the exception to that, though, Judy, and that is that unlike moonshine, I mean, if you – actually, you can. You can make your own beer. You can make your own wine. But if you give it to your neighbors or sell it to – if you sell it to your neighbors, you break the law. I guess pot's the same way. You can grow up to 5 plants in your backyard, and 5 plants can keep you going pretty good year-round, you know, if you grow them year-round. I mean, you don't need to buy anything.
But there are a lot of people that can't grow or don't want to grow, and putting a tax of 25% on a product is...
Well, isn't that about what the alcohol tax is?
No, alcohol is taxed depending on where it's sold. Down close to me, it's at 5%.
It's only 5%? Are you sure?
Yeah, I looked at my receipt.
Oh, that's a sales tax. That's not, no. There's a tax on that alcohol that is included in the price that you pay when you buy it on the off the shelf.
It's like excise taxes. This tax of 25% it starts out with 15%, and they add another 10% on that for the first year.
Right.
And then because it'll be in the state constitution, it's stated that they'll be able to raise the tax up to 15% every year if they so choose.
I think that's a good thing, though. I mean, pot's going to be really cheap in Colorado.
No. no tax should be put in a state constitution where it's left up to those in charge to raise the taxes.
But if you don't like what those in charge do, you can vote the bums out.
Well, that's what I've been trying to do, but too many idiots continue to vote for the Christian Taliban and the idiots that are controlling women, want to control women's bodies. I guess they're not getting laid enough, but...
Well, that's one theory.
In Texas, for almost going on 4 years, they've been forcing women to have transvaginal ultrasounds already.
But, that's incredible.
Yeah, but no tax should be put into the state constitution, leaving it up to those in charge to raise it whenever they want. It's going to force people to continue buying it from the criminals if it's made too high.
Well, you know, that was the argument that they made in California, 12, 14 years ago, whenever it was, that when California decriminalized medical marijuana and put a tax on it, was that, you know, it was going to force people were going to be buying it from the drug dealers. And it's not what happened. Judy, I think this is going to break the back of organized crime. And I think that I would encourage you to look into what your alcohol excise taxes actually are, because I'm guessing that probably about half the cost of a bottle of scotch is taxes in Colorado. I could be wrong. But Judy, thank you for the... Tom Hartman here with you. John in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Hey, John, you had some thoughts on some of the issues that we're discussing today?
Yeah, I think, you know, men are gods. You know, we have a very privileged position that we want to protect. We're not really either Democrats, believers of democracy or equality, really, when it comes down to it. And we desire that power and we want to hold on to it however we can. And I think there are several cultural traditions that we inherit, I think, from Christianity. Augustine, you know, didn't mind forcing people to believe. And then also Calvin didn't mind both forcing people to believe and also executing them if they didn't believe like he wanted them to believe.
Well, there's been no shortage of popes and pastors and pilgrims, for
right.
that matter, who have
and
taken
so
those positions.
There's this long tradition of forcing people to do things against their will, and we don't mind that. There's a certain violence that goes on just in everyday living, you know, without respect of the autonomy of the individual and their free will. And, you know, interestingly enough, the only church father that I know of, and there may be others, St. John of Chrysostom, both was against private property, and also he really, really stressed that we are to never force anyone to become Christian.
Are you talking about St. John of the Cross, who wrote Dark Night of the Soul?
No, not St. John of the Cross. St. John of Chrysostom was a church father from the 4th century, so it was just after Constantine,
okay.
And he lived in a very, he's like a bridge between the very early church, which was very much a, you know, believer in community and living
right.
in,
and the later church, which was basically the Roman Empire.
Yeah, and we believe, unfortunately, somehow the evolution of Christian belief has come to put private property even above people. They think,
right.
you know, you hear some of these evangelicals, but not just them. There are other people that support this idea that property is sacrosanct, and actually everything that is given to you, whether it is your own talents or whether it is property, belongs to God, essentially. And this is the teaching, you know, really, when it comes down to it, this is the teaching of Christianity. Unfortunately,
sure.
there are forces, you know, since Christianity kind of melded with the state, it kind of backtracked from that. But
yeah, I agree. You know, Len Schlein, in his book, The Alphabet Versus the Goddess, and Len is no longer with us. I knew Len Schlein. And he's a brain surgeon, literally. And he wrote two books, one called Art and Zen, as I recall, and the other, The Alphabet Versus the Goddess, which is absolutely brilliant. And in that book, he pointed out that in the, quote, Dark Ages, you know, like from 700 to around 1300 A.D. in Europe, the principal form of worship was goddess worship rather than God worship, that all of these churches across Western Europe, anyway, were dedicated to Mary, and that Mary was the focus of the celebrations, and Mary was what everybody worshipped, and Jesus was kind of, you know, kind of a sideline. And even the rosary, you know, Hail Mary, Mother God, the Lord is with thee, blessed art thou, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. As I recall, I used to know the rosary. Pray for us now in the hour of death, whatever. That came to an end with the printing press. That when we started learning to be literate, that the left side of our brain kind of rose up and took over, that controls the right side of our body. And when we started learning abstract alphabets before the age of seven, that it neurologically altered us, and literally within a generation of the decriminalization of reading in Western Europe, you saw widespread. First of all the Mary shrines were torn down, the Mary dedicated churches were changed to Jesus churches, and mm-hmm. you saw women being tortured and murdered and hung and right. burned as witches.
You know, it's kind of interesting because it really goes back to this idea, and I'm sure you're probably aware of it in philosophy, and it's within the Western mind much more than the Eastern mind, is a kind of dualism that we have to do the nasty work of the world by dividing it up this way.
Right.
And, you know, it is antithetical, really, to the basis of Christianity, in my opinion, but it's not just my opinion. I think it's of, you know, a lot of people who have really studied this, you know, the history of the church.
Oh, read Elaine Pagel's work. I believe it's Robert Funk's work, The Five Gospels. Read the Gospel of Thomas. You know, Jesus said, lift a rock, I am there. Split wood, I am there. I mean, it was essentially pantheism.
Yeah, I mean, we've taken our very soul, according to a lot of churchmen, and we've divided it up, and you know, to allow us to create this material.
Well, and we even divided divinity into three pieces. You know, the Holy Trinity, the Father, the Spirit, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, and all are characterized as male. None are characterized as female.
Well, you know, I have to disagree with you on that, because actually the idea of the Trinity is a continual flow of love from one being to the other. And so it's a very difficult concept to understand, and I don't necessarily think of it in terms of male or female. But
well, Father and Son are male words, John. Fathers and sons have penises.
Yeah,
where
yeah,
is the female word?
I think we've identified, you know, maleness with a kind of a very material kind of word, instead of understanding it in a sense, in an abstract sense. I mean, to say that you really know that, you know, God is male, like, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger, is absolutely categorically false.
And yet it's what most people believe who are, quote, people of the book, you know, Christians, Jews, and Muslims. God and gods are always expressed as males, or almost always. John, thank you for the call.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. EdisonFactor.com. Edison Factor is a supplement for the brain. More information at EdisonFactor.com. SolarWorld.com. SolarWorld has a 35-year history in the manufacturing of solar in America. More information at SolarWorld.com. Carbonite.com. Automatic online backup and file recovery. More information at Carbonite.com. AngiesList.com. Detailed reviews on roofers, plumbers, house cleaners, dentists, and more. More information at AngiesList.com. Stamps.com. Postage online from your computer. More information at stamps.com. And our website, tomhartman.com. You support our programs, and please help by supporting the people who help make this program possible. There are links to all of our underwriters at TomHartmann.com. Thank you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartmann Program.
And welcome back to the second hour of our program. Tom Hartmann here with you. Last night on our television program, on The Big Picture, and you can see the video of this over at TomHartmann.com, we had Congressman Alan Grayson on talking. He had brought the family of this grandmother who got blown up by a drone in Pakistan. He had brought their family over to testify before Congress. And here's just a few seconds of the comments that Alan Grayson made last night on our program.
This did, in fact, put a human face on this, particularly the testimony of the granddaughter, who was as a young child. And she said that she had always prayed for blue skies before the drone attacks started because they were so beautiful. And now she prays for gray skies because when there's gray skies, the drones are absent.
Yeah. Pretty grim stuff. One of the most brilliant documentary filmmakers in the world, and certainly working in the United States, is Robert Greenwald. He has been just some absolutely extraordinary work, and over the years, many times has visited our program to share it with you. He has a new film out about the whole drone thing, and the website, I think I have this right, is unmanned.warcosts.com. Do I have that right, Robert?
Actually, it is AmericasDroneWars.com.
Okay.
At AmericasDroneWars.com, you can get the film for free for the next couple of weeks.
Okay, great. AmericasDroneWars.com. This is Robert Greenwald, activist, founder of Brave New Films, which is also at BraveNewFilms.org. AmericasDroneWars.com. Robert, your phone sounds really, really, really ragged. It sounds like you're talking from the bottom of a tin can, but let's try this. Tell us about the film.
I'm sorry about the phone, Tom. I went into a quiet spot, and I'm so wonderful to be on your show again. You, of course, have been one of the few voices talking about drones for a long time now, and it's deeply appreciated. So the hearing, the briefing yesterday, was the result of a year's work. I interviewed and met Rafiq and his family when I was in Pakistan. They're a big part of the final film. And we worked tirelessly to try to get them to come to the States, to get them passports, to get them visas, and frankly, to fight off interference and difficulty from either the CIA or the State Department.
Hmm. And so this is a full-length feature documentary?
Yes. What there is, it's a full-length feature documentary, and we released it just today. As I say, it's free thanks to an amazing donor. And at the briefing yesterday, I showed a clip from the film about Rafiq, about his son Zubair, about his daughter Nabila, who Congressman Grayson was very taken with. And when I met them in Pakistan, I mean, you can't be a breathing human being and not be deeply moved when you hear these children talk about the drone attack, when you hear the father talk about the death of his mother. And it was then that I made a commitment that I was going to try to get them to the States.
And people can find this right now over at AmericasDroneWars.com, right?
Right. They can find the full film, including the section on Zubair and his family. We got interviews with them. There are x-rays showing the injuries to the children. And it actually, he shows us where the drone hit his 67-year-old mother working in the fields. Not a terrorist, not a threat. Further indication of both the moral and the fact that this is not a policy that's going to make anybody safer, Tom. And you, of course, have known that and known that for years.
We are finding now, we're talking with Robert Greenwald of Brave New Films, the activist and filmmaker and founder of Brave New Films, about his new piece, that is his new documentary, full-length documentary that's up over at AmericasDroneWars.com about America's drone wars. And one of the points that Congressman Grayson made in my conversation with him last night was that Pakistan is theoretically our ally. We give them $1 billion, that's with a B, $1 billion a year. And Would it not be, and we have identified, according to people in the intelligence community or legislators who have been briefed by people in the intelligence community, somewhere between 400 and 600, probably around 500 people in Pakistan who represent a legitimate or serious threat to the United States, in as much as they could do or organize the kinds of things that Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and Osama bin Laden did, if they were absolutely successful, and that these are the people that we are supposed to be targeting with these drones. For $1 billion a year, couldn't we say to the Pakistani government, you know, next year you're getting that $1 billion is going to be contingent on your arresting 500 people?
Oh, but there's no question about it, Tom. But the problem is you're talking logic and common sense. And this is not something that's being driven by logic and common sense. It's being driven by, sadly, a bipartisan agreement that the way to safety and security is invade, occupy, or drone, rather than turn to local authorities that other countries have done throughout the world and say, yes, there are dangerous people. Find them, arrest them, put them in jail.
Right.
But we're not doing that, and we have to start doing that because it's not just the horrible morality of killing innocent people, but as Imran Khan said to me, who I interviewed when I was over there, who was a significant candidate for president of Pakistan, yes, we have 100 or 200 dangerous fanatics. Now you have 800,000 people who hate the United States because of drones.
Right. So we are making, in other words, we are engaging in a policy which is making as many people, as many terrorists as we are taking, and probably making more. The metaphor, and Robert, I just got a text from one of our radio stations saying that they can't understand you. Maybe you can keep your answers kind of short, and I'll essentially repeat what you're saying. But and we just have a minute left anyway, but the metaphor that I use, and I think Americans could kind of understand this, is Mexico has a terrorism problem with the narco-terrorists who literally will go into a town and murder every police officer, kill 1,000 people and not think twice about it. You know, well-armed terrorist gangs. And if Mexico, and we all acknowledge that, Mexico has a terrorist problem. If Mexico were to say, you know, one of our narco-terrorists is living right now, is hiding out in a house in Phoenix, Arizona. We know where he is. We're going to fly a drone over Phoenix, Arizona, and we're going to take out that house. And if it blows up 3 or 4 houses around it, well, I'm sorry, that's collateral damage. But it's in our country's interest to stop terrorism, and we're going to take this guy out. How long do you think the American people would stand for that?
Not for 1 minute.
Right. And that's the problem, is we expect the Pakistanis to say, oh, it's the great Americans. They must know what they're doing. They must be just all. But that's not how the Pakistanis are reacting to this, the same way that Americans would be reacting if Mexico started dropping drone bombs on homes in Phoenix. And if they started
killing our relatives.
Yeah. Yeah. Whoa. Your phone just really made up. Oh, we just lost you. Yeah. OK. Your phone just totally croaked. I'll just finish this up. Robert Greenwald was with us. We only have 40 seconds anyway. And his new film is available at AmericasDroneWars.com. AmericasDroneWars.com. Be sure to check that out. And he's an activist filmmaker and founder of Brave New Films, BraveNewFilms.org. And this is a serious issue. I mean, if there is a strong case to be made that the whole bin Laden attack that we experienced on 9/11 was the result of blowback from George Herbert Walker Bush putting an American military base in Saudi Arabia so that he could invade Iraq back in the day, right? Back in the 80s, back in the late 80s, early 90s, whenever that first Gulf War was. And that was what enraged bin Laden. In other words, it was blowback. So what kind of blowback are we creating right now with our drone wars in Pakistan that we're not going to see for another 5, 10, 15, 20 years, but we're going to see? It's time to stop this insane policy. Not only that, our drone pilots are getting PTSD at horrible levels because they're killing people and they know it.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And thus the war comes home, just like wars always do. It's time to say no to the drone policy. Use them to spy, but putting bombs on them, bad idea. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And so So anyway, the drone war thing, I doubt that there's going to be a whole lot of debate about that, that many people want to weigh in on that beyond just, yes, you know, hallelujah, salute the flag, amen. But this question of why, I'm still stuck in this question of why would somebody like Senator Obasheim sponsor legislation that says that any woman who gets who has a miscarriage has to report herself to the police department the next day. I'm astounded by that. And also, I got to tell you, this Max Out of Pocket, there's a Blue Streak has a great post over at Democratic Underground that is really fascinating. And somebody said, hey, wait a minute, this can't be right. And I got to share with you how that played out. But anyhow, the first, Sybilla, watching Free Speech TV in Greer, South Carolina. Hey, Sybilla, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I am well, thank you. I hope the same is true of you.
Hey, I was calling regarding the gentleman running for Attorney General of Virginia.
Right, right.
Taking away women's rights to health care.
Well, he goes beyond that. He wants women who have miscarriages to report themselves to the police department.
Right, right, right. Only because doctors can confirm under examination, if you want to be technical about it.
Is it? Because he says report yourself to the police, not to a hospital emergency room.
I understand. So I can only imagine what technique, never mind what techniques. Yeah. But what concerns me very, very much with that going on all over the country, taking away a woman's right to choice to health care, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Health care to begin with, whatever the circumstance,
right,
to me. And then dealing with the voter rights issues, for example, in Virginia and particularly in Texas, because in Texas, a woman is required to change their name when they get married, and their middle name becomes their maiden name.
Only for the purposes of their driver's license.
Right, and then they can't vote. So my theory between why all this is going on and this far right-wing Christian thing is when you listen to some of these individuals speak, it's clear what they're looking for is the family unit. If you have the family unit and the wife stays at home and everybody is the way they were used to be, it would solve the problem. Women have just had the right to vote, not even 100 years yet.
Right.
Okay. Women would have to go to midwives if they wanted to terminate a pregnancy or if they had a miscarriage, because we're going to go back to that. And that is my concern, and I think that's what the purpose is. They want everything to go back. If you listen to some of those Texas men down there, they were talking on this one show. It's unbelievable. They want everything back.
But see, that old past that they're talking about, that old past,
yeah,
never really existed. I mean, families, there have always been single-parent families. There have always been,
in the 1920s.
Oh, sure there were. It's just...
Well, I know. I'm not talking about me. I'm talking about the way the right wing...
Oh, yeah, but that's my point, is that it's a myth. I mean, this idealized nuclear family that was in the perfect world and it was all beaver cleaver, that, you know, never existed. It might have existed in the, you know, upper white middle class in some neighborhoods, but even then it was problematic. So, excellent point, Sybilla. Thank you for calling and sharing that with us. We'll be right back. Renee Davis is going to be with us. Stick around. Welcome back to Talk Media for the Sane Among Us, the Tom Hartman Program. And just a reminder, the Hunter School and the New England Salem Children's Village, hunterschool.org, salemchildrensvillage.org, needs your help. We're doing a fundraiser this week. This is the annual fundraising drive for this program's charity, which Louise and I started back in 1978. And the toll-free number to call is 800-897-8358. And we've raised, as of this morning, so far this week, we've raised, I think, about $3,000. And we're trying to get enough to put a new roof on, in particular, Mountain House and some of the other houses, some generators, a new kitchen, and to pave the driveway. So we've got a ways to go. Renee Davis is the parent of one of the students at Hunter School, and so knows about that program. The website, again, is hunterschool.org. Renee, thank you for being willing to come on the program and talk about you, your experience and your son's experience at Hunter School.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm just pleased to be here and to help raise money for the school.
Thank you. To whatever extent you're comfortable with it, you want to tell us the story of your son and how he came to Hunter School and what has happened since then?
Sure. So before finding the Hunter School, I guess you could surmise that Wilson's educational experience was basically a living hell. He has been diagnosed with severe ADHD and unable to function in a public school setting.
Right.
And after probably 2.5 years of attempting to make things work in the public school setting, I found the Hunter School.
Mm-hmm.
And it has radically changed our lives. Wilson went from being a child who was very rageful, throwing temper tantrums, but they would escalate beyond even temper tantrums because he was so incredibly frustrated. First, second, and part of third grade, he was an unmanageable child. We were alone in the house together, so it was just the two of us quite frequently, and he would get home from school and just rage, because he was so incredibly frustrated. And in third grade, late second grade, early third grade, he would come home from school and share with me ideas about trying to hurt himself. Hmm. So I took instant action as quick as I could and started looking at schools. And I found the Hunter School. And they've saved my child's life. They've saved my family life with Wilson. He's now in sixth grade, and just a radical shift. He's become very mindful of his energy and how his energy affects other people. He's happy-go-lucky. He's still incredibly ADHD, very, very busy guy, talkative, but he smiles. He's engaged with people. He's loving. He has friends. The Hunter School gave us a gift, possibly one of the best gifts I could have ever received in my life, and that's my son. I have a son that is just a joy to be with now.
Wow. I'm... That's wonderful. We're talking with Renee Davis. She's the parent of one of the kids who is at the Hunter School that we're raising funds for right now to upgrade the facilities a little. The toll-free number is 800-897-8358, 800-897-8358, and anything that you can do to help is much appreciated. Renee, how did you find the Hunter School?
I actually, in my process of trying to get Wilson help, I had independently hired a school psychologist here in northern New England, and he had heard of your school.
I see.
And what was really interesting was I had read your books, Tom. I was this frantic parent, you know, just scouring anything I could find on ADHD.
Uh-huh.
And your books were an incredible help. I didn't realize there was a school. The school psychologist said, well, you know, you really might want to look at the Hunter School. And the minute I walked through the door and I met Lori Ferris, mm-hmm. I started to tell her my story, and it was a kinship instantly. Whereas my other experiences in the public school and the other schools I had gone to look at for Wilson, there still felt like this judgment. There still felt like we're not quite sure we want to take your child on.
Mm.
And they wanted to label him emotionally disturbed. He's not emotionally disturbed. He has severe ADHD. He has an inability to regulate his energy. He has an inability to regulate his emotions. That was then. Now, due to the Hunter School, he can regulate his emotions. they've given them the tools to be able to regulate frustration, aggression. They've given him the tools to be able to regulate energy he takes in from things he might see, whether it's the news or TV. I will say probably the only place he can't regulate still is if it's an engine, like on a four-wheeler or a truck.
I mean, I understand that.
He's a total little boy.
He's a boy.
You know? Exactly. I mean, it just, he gets going right then and there.
Yeah.
So I never would have been able to enjoy that, though, had I not found the Hunter School to help us.
Yeah. Well, I'm so glad that it has worked so well for you. And Laurie was on the show yesterday, and I should get her back to tell the story of Zach, her son, because her son's, and we didn't get into it on the air yesterday. I should have, because Laurie's proud to tell the story. She went on Oprah's show and with her son Zach and told the story that her son went through a very similar experience to what you just described with your son, Renee. So, Renee, thank you so much for being with us today.
Oh, thank you for having me, and please help the Hunter School.
Yes, and thank you. And for people who want to help out, it's 800-897-8358. That's 800-897-8358. And you can do it online at hunterschool.org.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
That's the Hunter School, hunterschool.org, 800-897-8358. Good, the bad, and the very macromastically ugly, brought to you by the organic wine company, ecowine.com. The good, Madison Kimry, North Carolina's youngest Moral Monday activist, is at it again. On Monday, she took to the podium in the city of Burlington to bash Republican Governor Pat McCrory for his attack on voter rights. Check it out.
This is not leadership. The young people of North Carolina deserve better. I am not a prop. I am part of the new generation of suffragettes. And I will not stand silent while laws are passed to reduce the amount of voter turnout by young people in my home state.
Did I mention that she's 12 years old? Just awesome. The man. The NSA, the spy organization, has sent cease and desist letters to Dan McCall, a Minnesota man who makes money selling T-shirts that make fun of the surveillance state. McCall's shirts feature the NSA logo and say things like, "The NSA, the only part of the government that listens." Seriously. There's others. He says, peeping on you while you're sleeping, spying on you since 1952. Anyhow, federal law apparently prevents anyone from copying government logos without permission. Wow, just when you thought the NSA couldn't get any lamer, they decide to go after the guy selling ironic T-shirts. Way to fight terrorism, guys. And the very, very ugly, Kevin Swanson. Religious right activists like Swanson have some pretty wacky ideas, but what he said during a recent broadcast of his Generations radio show really takes the cake. Swanson warned his listeners not to buy Girl Scout cookies because the Girl Scouts support lesbianism and radical individualism. Seriously, listen.
Individualism of feminism has been devastating to this country. Dave, I'd say you ought to say no to the Girl Scout cookies, too. I mean, I don't want to support lesbianism. I don't want to support Planned Parenthood, and I don't want to support abortion. And if that be the case, I'm not buying Girl Scout cookies.
Apropos of our conversation today. Believe it or not, Swanson's rant about the Girl Scouts is actually based on a popular right-wing conspiracy theory that the Girl Scouts are a front group for radical feminists. You know, I think it's safe to say that anyone who spends their time bashing the Girl Scouts has views that can only be described as very, very ugly. Which takes us back to that question. Why is it that men like Mr. Obershane, I believe his name is, the state senator from Virginia who wants to be the new attorney general, he's running for Ken Cuccinelli's job, the Republican, why would somebody like him sponsor legislation that says a woman, if she has a miscarriage, must report herself to the local police department, and if she doesn't, she goes to jail for a year for having a miscarriage? when one in four pregnancies results in a miscarriage. Really? Anyhow, just I did mention Blue Streak's brilliant post over at DU. It says, if you go to the exchanges, one of the most crucial data items you'll see is maximum out-of-pocket. That's, in the worst case, how much you're going to spend. He says, the pre-ACA, he says, what is the maximum out-of-pocket for policies before Obamacare? Well, there was no maximum limit. I mean, basically, they could cancel you in the middle of your treatment. They could throw you off. These are my words, not Blue Streak's. But Blue Streak points this out. And so, somebody says, good. And then somebody named No One Man says, I have real health insurance. My max out of pocket is my premiums, $138 a month for a family of four. That's it. No more. No hidden fees. If you think $10,000 a year is a good deal as a out of pocket, maximum out of pocket, you are blanking nuts or suffering Stockholm syndrome. So that was the post from No One Man in response to Blue Streak's post. So then Blue Streak says, what's your annual cap? What's your lifetime cap? Please tell us about this. As if, come on, give me a break. Please tell us about this policy that covers a family of four against all medical risks, never requiring you to pay a penny more than your $138 premium, no matter what medical situations come up, and guarantees your coverage not to be canceled so long as you make that $138 payment on time every month. What is the name of the insurance company? If this is not complete BS, then, goes on from there. So No One Man replies. This is where it gets interesting. No One Man replies and says, I don't have caps. I don't have copays. I don't have networks. I don't have deductibles. I don't have a network. I don't have limited access in any way. There isn't a single trick to induce me to choose between food and health care. I don't even have to make that premium payment on time for my coverage. If I can't make it, the government will. What is the name of that health insurance company? BC Ministry of Health, British Columbia. The plan is called MSP, Medical Service Plan. There are no tiers. There's a single plan for the poorest to the wealthiest robber barons. It covers all necessary medical services and puts everyone in the same queue. I purchased this as a self-employed individual because I don't have an employer to do it for me, although many do. Medicare is far inferior to this. Boy, I guess. And then goes on to say, the ACA is an overwhelmingly crummy fix to your slow-motion disaster, drowning your nation and bankrupting your country. Again, you have to be insane or suffering Stockholm syndrome to slurp this stuff up. It's like someone handing you a solo cup and asking you to bail water while the Titanic goes under. Remarkable. And then the Republicans have the gall to say, oh, we've got to abolish this thing and demand that Kathleen Sebelius resign. Right. Jack, in Studio City, California, you had some thoughts on misogyny on our earlier question about why would Senator Obershane, who wants to be the Attorney General, the Republican Attorney General of Virginia, want to put women in jail if they fail to report to the police that they had a miscarriage?
Hi, Tom, and thanks again for your example. Ethnobotanist Terence McKenna speculates that the naturally occurring belladonna in European-grown foods, the result of an alkaline soil condition there, might explain extreme male behavior like chivalry in the Crusades. So maybe the extreme patriarchal and misogynist male disbehavior here is related to our petrochemical GMO food supplies, the depletion of micronutrients, the effects of pesticides and other hormone disruptors.
Well, and
your thoughts.
It's very interesting. First of all, for people who don't know, Terence McKenna, who's no longer with us, although his brother's still out there and still writing, and I think just produced a documentary a while back.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Terence McKenna produced a brilliant body of work in his lifetime, including a book about his experience with his brother called True Hallucinations, and Food of the Gods, I believe, was one of his books. Mm-hmm. And basically, as an ethnobioticist or whatever. Anyhow, he studied ethnogens. He studied plants that make you high and came to the conclusion that much of modern civilization was the result of our evolving as a consequence of our interaction with hallucinogenic plants over the last millions of years. And he makes actually a very compelling case. I had not read his belladonna theory, or if I did, I mean, it was 25 years ago that I was reading Terrence McKenna's stuff, so it's been a while, or at least 20 years ago. In fact, I remember when he died. I mean, you know, I was familiar with him when he died, which was, I think, about a decade and a half ago,
mm-hmm.
of brain cancer.
Yep.
But in any case, I don't recall his belladonna theory, but the belladonna-containing plants are the nightshade family plants. And the nightshade family plants are potatoes, the pepper family, the green peppers and red peppers, and hot peppers, tomatoes, and eggplant. Those are the belladonna family. And there's an interesting twist on this. I mean, for a lot of years, tomatoes were believed by Europeans to be poisonous. And in fact, many of the belladonna family plants were believed, but particularly tomatoes. And the theory that is promoted as to why that was, Thomas Jefferson famously grew and ate tomatoes here in the United States and burst that bubble, broke that theory in the United States and made tomatoes something that was part of the American diet. But the theory was that back then, a lot of the cookware was made out of pewter, which is tin and lead. And because tomatoes are acidic, they would leach the lead out. And so if you ate a lot of tomato stuff, you got lead poisoning and you died. Or you went crazy and you died. And so it wasn't really the tomatoes or the belladonna-associated compounds in the tomatoes. But here's an interesting thing. My mom had, who is no longer with us, but my mom had really severe arthritis. It started in her 50s, and it was disfiguring her joints. And I, you know, this was before the Google machine, but I researched this as much as I could. And one of the things I found is that some people respond to belladonna-containing plants or to these nightshade family plants with arthritis. And so I suggested to Mom that she go on a diet that had absolutely no tomatoes or tomato sauce, potatoes, no eggplants, and no peppers. And she did. She was desperate. And her hands went back to normal. And she was largely without arthritis until the day she died. And myself now I'm in my early 60s, when I eat a lot of tomato sauce and a lot of these plants, potatoes and things like that, and I know when I've done it, you know, if I eat a lot of tomato sauce on like, you know, Italian food, two, three days in a row, my knuckles on my left hand start to swell up, particularly on the inside of my hand. So, you know, whether that's producing misogynistic behavior or not, I don't know, but those... plants, but the plants we eat affect our bodies. There's no doubt in my mind about that. So, Jack, thanks for calling and sharing that story. It's a great one. And hopefully you've turned some people on to Terrence McKenna, because he's really worth reading. We'll be back. Ellen Ratner will be with us in about 5 minutes with the Talk Radio News Report.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And the Hunter School. We're doing our fundraiser for the Hunter School. Please call and make a donation now. 800-897-8358. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. It's 15 minutes before the hour. And Roy is it Scio, Ohio? S-C-I-O?
Yes, sir.
So you wanted to talk about my question of... why would Senator Obuchain propose legislation requiring women to report themselves to the police department if they have a miscarriage?
Well, yes, it answers that in a sense, but it also, I think, answers this question of this sickness you was mentioning about, you call it a madness that mankind seems to have about trying to control the feminine.
Yes.
And, you know, the feminine is the generative principle of the universe, and we're talking about life. And so I have here, I've read this book by Eric Fromm.
Mm.
Familiar with his work?
I am.
It's called The Heart of Man, It's Genius for Good and Evil. It's by Perennial Library, Harper & Row Publishers. And
right, Eric Fromm wrote that back in the 50s, didn't he? The 60s?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
And the quote is from a chapter called Love of Death and Love of Life, and it talks about necrophilia. The necrophilous person can relate to an object, a flower or a person, only if he possesses it. He loves control, and in the act of controlling, he kills life.
Now, for people who, if I may interrupt you just for a second, you can continue, but a lot of people may not know what a necrophiliac is. A necrophiliac is a person who enjoys having sex with corpses.
Yes, and also he just enjoys thinking about upon death a lot, according to what Eric Fromm is saying.
Okay, okay. So back to the quote.
He thinks about death a lot.
Right.
It says that he loves control, and in the act of controlling, he kills life. He is deeply afraid of life because it is disorderly and uncontrollable by its very nature. The necrophilous person is attracted to darkness and night. And it says, on the other hand, the biophilic, the person who loves life, have their own principle of good and evil. Good is all that serves life. Evil is all that serves death. Good is reverence for life, all that enhances life, growth, unfolding. Evil is all that stifles life, narrows it down, and cuts it into pieces. And Eric Fromm goes on to warn that those in whom the necrophilous orientation gains dominance will slowly kill the biophiliac side of themselves. And I would just like to say that we live in a culture today that seems rather necrophiliac, considering that, you know, we have an obsession with zombies and other dark aspects of. I can see that.
And
war, absolutely.
I mean, even to the point of the war on drugs and the war on poverty. I mean, we even use war as a positive metaphor.
Yes, sir. And I understand that we have a shadow self that needs to express itself, but I also think, you know, with fracking and so forth, another thing that Eric Fromm brings up is that they love mechanizing things. They love to industrialize things because it controls them. It's like cyborganizing things. And,
right.
And when we, you know, I live in a fracking zone where they've opened just recently. One of the largest Utica plants is going to be built here, and they've also got a plant here for the oil and gas here.
Wow. You could you know, to extend the metaphor, you could call fracking rape of Mother Earth. I mean, you know, it's a penetration certainly of Mother Earth. Roy, thank you for sharing that. I'm sorry we're out of time. Thank you very much for the call. We'll be right back. Ellen Ratner will be right with us. Back, Tom Hartman here with you, 10 minutes before the hour, and let's check in with Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com, where you can give a goat to help a rescued slave and even receive a photo of your goat and the person you helped. Ellen, welcome.
Well, thank you. As you know, Secretary Sebelius was on the House side today, and she was talking to the committee, answering their questions for several hours. First of all, the most interesting thing I noticed is there are three physicians, at least, that I counted on the committee. I may have missed some because I wasn't totally listened to all of the committee today, but they call them doctors. So the committee chair addressed them as Dr. So-and-so rather than Congressman so-and-so.
Huh.
I found that in score. They're all Republican.
Were they all medical doctors?
And the medical doctors. Yeah, medical doctors.
Huh.
So that's the first thing. Second thing, and I'm not saying this in order, but this is some of the issues that came up. One, she was asked about security of the website, and Mike Rogers, I believe, who's not chair of that committee, said, well, there's no security if the site is not finished and can be hacked and that. Well, Mitra Corporation had, in fact, vouched for the security of the website, and people are not being asked a lot of personal questions. So she said that it was absolutely secure. There is no question about that. Then she was given a lot of grief by somebody about whether she signed up. Well, she explained that she gets government health care, but the Republicans are now saying, well, she's eligible for Medicare, so she shouldn't be getting government care through her job. I mean, I can't even tell you. Then she was asked how many people had signed up and not been able to sign up, how many people had signed up successfully, et cetera. She said she doesn't trust the numbers. So then they said, well, we have contractors that say that you can give these numbers. She said, I'm sorry, I do not trust the numbers coming out right now, and you will have them in mid-November. Well, that wasn't good enough. She got asked by two or three people from the Republican side about that. Then she was asked, I mean, it was like unbelievable. Then she was asked, well, was this, whose responsibility is this? She says, it's my responsibility. Well, who do you work for? Don't you serve at the president, pleasure of the president? Well, yes, I serve at the pleasure of the president. Well, isn't then he the one responsible? No, I'm responsible. This went back and forth for probably 7 or 8 questions. And she said, well, I guess if you want to say it's the president's response, she didn't say it exactly like that, yeah. The president's responsible, but I am the one responsible for this website. Then she was asked about, and this was actually from the Democratic side, about the overall costs in terms of what it's going to cost people. She said that actually since they have begun to put in Obamacare and since some of the rules were coming out, that actually people's premiums didn't go up more than 1.5% maximum. That previously that it had gone up several percent, and in fact it was saving on an average of 16% this year for people. But of course the Republicans were not very happy about that.
I didn't see that on the Drudge Report today.
And the other thing, I'm sure you've seen this on the Drudge Report, I like to report what the Republicans are talking about, not from Drudge, but from our website. I've been asked this about several. They must have gotten the memo today, because several of my Republican hosts have said to me, well, Michelle Obama's classmate from Princeton was one of the people that got one of the contracts. So I said, well, where's the proof that they know each other? Well, they were both members of the Black Graduates of Princeton. I said, well, you know, if there was a Jewish members of people who had gone to...
It's the Black people getting together. Oh, my God.
I mean, do you believe this?
And
then thereafter, the fact that George Schindler, not of Schindler's List, from CGI, was a donor to Obama, and that's why he got the contract.
But CGI, those numbers are out. CGI overwhelmingly gave more money, and their employees gave more money to Republican candidates and to Mitt Romney than to Democratic candidates and President Obama.
I'm just telling you where the right wing is coming from. This is the right wing report.
They're trying everything.
Today.
You know, last night on his TV show, Sean Hannity said that, you know, the death of Obamacare is proving to be the end of liberalism in America. And, I mean, he didn't say it out loud, but I guess the implied message is that, therefore, we're going to successfully do away with Social Security, do away with Medicare, do away with unemployment insurance, do away with the minimum wage. You know, the wish list of the Republican Party, the Paul Ryan wish list. You think?
No.
No. Okay. All right.
Speaking of Paul Ryan, today he and the chair of the Senate, Democrats, Budget Committee, Patty Murray, made nicey-nice in their opening speeches today. This was in the public part of the Conference Committee on the Budget, talking about how hard it is, but how they know that they're going to get to something.
Right.
So that was today's love
fest.
But then
he said, there is no way that we're going to raise taxes, period. Don't even bring it up. And because she started out by saying, you know, well, maybe we can work something out
right,
here.
Right, right. Well, I don't think there's going to be much of a compromise. It was a little bit of a, you know, nicey night. It was much nicer and less contentious than the other. A farm bill also came up for a conference committee today. So that is actually getting somewhat off the ground.
Why doesn't John Boehner, why instead of throwing these things to conference committee, why doesn't he simply drop the Senate budget on the floor of the House and say, take a vote? Why doesn't he put the farm bill on the floor of the House and say, take a vote? Here's the Senate bill. It's passed the Senate. It would pass the House.
Well, it probably would in some form. The idea is that when a bill does go to conference, you're supposed to iron it out so that it's just a yay or nay vote on either side.
I see.
So it may actually happen. Now, it was interesting. Tom Harkin talked about how he'd been through several conference bills and he listed them all.
The senator.
And, yes, because this is a conference committee. But one he talked about, one is they are expecting the farmers to produce more food than they ever had. And secondly, and this was where he really took off, and I'm sorry he's not going to stay in the Senate, that he talked about environmental issues and how, you know, they used to pay for land to be fallow in our early days, if you recall.
Right.
But now they really can't. There's too much runoff. There's too much other things that are happening, and they have to pay attention to environmental issues. This, he said, was very new in the farm bill.
Well, wow. That's interesting. A lot of that, I would guess, is due to things like Roundup Ready products where, you know, everything is dead except the one plant that is genetically modified to be.
Yeah, we know about those genetically modified.
Yeah, and look at what's happening. Is it Washington State? They're having that vote. Is that this week or next? I think it is.
You pay more attention to that
labeling.
Neck of the woods that I would. Also, by the way, today there was a meeting between Susan Rice, James Clapper, and Angela Merkel's person, from Germany, and that did take place today, but we don't know what happened.
That must have been a very interesting conversation. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, goatsfortheoldgoat.com. Check it out. Thank you, Ellen.
Thank you.
And also, if you'd like to donate to the Hunter School, 800-897-8358. Thank you.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. EdisonFactor.com. Edison Factor is a supplement for the brain. More information at EdisonFactor.com. SolarWorld.com. SolarWorld has a 35-year history in the manufacturing of solar in America. More information at SolarWorld.com. Carbonite.com. Automatic online backup and file recovery. More information at Carbonite.com. AngiesList.com. Detailed reviews on roofers, plumbers, house cleaners, dentists, and more. More information at AngiesList.com. Stamps.com. Postage online from your computer. More information at Stamps.com. And our website, TomHartman.com. You support our programs, and please help by supporting the people who help make this program possible. There are links to all of our underwriters at TomHartman.com. Thank you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Norman Solomon is in the studio with us, political activist, founding director of the Institute for Public Accuracy, author of your most recent book, Made Love, Got War, Close Encounters of America's Warfare State. The website, Norman Solomon, as you would expect it to be spelled, NormanSolomon.com. And Norman, welcome back to the program.
Great to be here. Thanks, Tom.
It's always great having you with us. Your most recent article I thought was fascinating. Why Snowden's passport matters. First of all, what are we talking about here? Presumably, Edward Snowden's U.S. passport has been pulled, right, by the U.S. government.
Yeah, about the time that he got to Moscow, Secretary of State Kerry pulled it, canceled it, and that has basically made him a resident of Russia, whether he really wants to stay there or not. Of course,
it's made him a stateless person.
Yeah, absolutely. And meanwhile, he's trashed for taking refuge in Russia, which is where basically he was when he became a stateless person. So actually, the group I'm with, RootsAction.org, has put up a website called SupportEdwardSnowden.org, and 28,000 people have gone there already to personally send an email to Secretary of State Kerry saying, give the guy his passport back. I mean, he hasn't been convicted of any crime. Mm-hmm. And I remember when I was visiting Russia, when it was the Soviet Union, one of the talking points from the U.S. was how bad they were. They wouldn't let people travel.
Now, right.
So go figure.
Right. Although if you want to go to Cuba, I mean, you know, you'll experience a little bit of that here in the United States as well.
We don't have
total bragging rights, although we're a heck of a lot better than North Korea.
Yeah, we've high jumped over that low bar. You know, I think it's fascinating as well that the U.S. news media didn't make a big deal in even the medium term about the fact that the U.S. government got Italy, Spain, Portugal, and France to basically deny airspace to a Latin American president on the off chance that Edward Snowden was on the plane coming out of Moscow. And again, I take that as a metaphor. We run the world. The USA not only has the right to wiretap, eavesdrop, read everybody's text messages, but now we get to decide how presidents from different countries fly home.
Right. U.S. empire. Well, we grounded the airplane of, what was his name, the president of...
Evo Morales.
Evo Morales.
Yeah. Yes.
And which is mind-boggling when you think about it. You know?
Yeah, the arrogance of power, the hubris, which we've seen, and I'm afraid that just the breaking news in the last day, you know, you mentioned earlier in the program, James Clapper and Keith Alexander just testified in Capitol Hill. Their credibility is perhaps minus zero at this point, given Clapper's lying record in front of a congressional committee earlier this year. And we're also getting all of this damage control coming from the chair of the Senate Intelligence Committee, Dianne Feinstein. These folks are trying to retrench to staunch the bleeding of credibility, but I don't think it's going to work. You know, in the last few hours, the Washington Post just broke another story based on the Snowden documents showing that every day the NSA is tapping into millions of emails through Yahoo and Google data centers overseas siphoning them off.
Now, over at Politico, there's a headline. I haven't read the article. I saw the headline that said NSA pushes back and denies that they have access to Google Mail.
Yeah, I think that the head of the NSA gives weasel words an understatement status, because when you parse what these folks are saying when they go to Capitol Hill or go in front of the cameras, every week it turns out you go back a few weeks and they were lying in, the worst way that lawyers lie.
Lies of omission rather than commission.
Absolutely. Depends on what the definition of is in terms of is we respecting the First, Fourth, and Fifth Amendment, for instance.
Right, yeah. But let's get back to Ed Snowden's passport. I find this fascinating. It seems to me that the most important part of the story is the part that has not been covered at all, to the best of my knowledge, in the mainstream media in the United States. We've had a couple conversations about it on this program and on our TV show, and that is that the Soviet Union, what used to be Russia, forgive me, but my age is showing, Russia is the only country in the world that has a nuclear capability that is parallel to ours, or roughly similar to ours, the only country in the world, or one of probably fewer than 8 or 9 countries in the world, that the United States would never in their wildest dreams imagine dropping a drone bomb onto. It seems to me that that Snowden was not safe in Hong Kong, and he felt that he had to go someplace where he would be safe, that he never was trying to get to Ecuador, because if Evo Morales was deposed, and we would make sure that happened really fast. I was in Venezuela the first time they did a coup against what's his name, who died recently. Man.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Hugo Chavez. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Brain farts are terrible things. Anyway, if he was in a small South American country, he would not have the guarantee of some kind of long-term stability. He's now protected by, thousands of nuclear weapons, essentially. Is it really, has it gotten that bad that a whistleblower needs to have that kind of a protector? And Putin hasn't even come out and said he's his protector. In fact, he said, this guy's got to tone down his activity or I'm going to kick him out of the country. Isn't that really a conversation we should be having?
Oh, absolutely. The layers of irony there are mind-blowing. And the fact is that an autocratic country, which is not within the U.S. government's sphere of domination, was almost the only place on the planet that one could imagine, as you say, that Snowden could go and stay and be reasonably secure from a drone strike or being snatched by SEAL forces or whatever. And if he'd gone almost anywhere in Latin America, through a democratic process or otherwise, he would have been a lot more vulnerable to suddenly becoming persona non grata. I think we've seen that the Obama administration, perhaps in the empire tradition of the U.S. government, has no compunction, again, diverting and forcing the landing of Evo Morales' plane as a sovereign head of a sovereign government. And I think this goes to this deep question. When you look at Capitol Hill, you look at the Democratic Party leadership, and I speak as a Democrat. I was an Obama delegate in 2008 to the Democratic National Convention. You've got Dianne Feinstein chairing the Intelligence Committee. You've got Nancy Pelosi, the minority leader in the House. You've got the entire Democratic leadership in the Senate and House running interference for the surveillance state and the warfare state under this White House. And for those of us who consider ourselves to be progressives and Democrats, that is a challenge that we need a principled, methodical, pragmatic insurrection against the leadership of this party.
And yet this has been going on since the Johnson administration in a big way. There was the argument made back in the 60s that the war in Vietnam was all about making money for the contractors. And in fact, there was I don't know if it was true or not, but I remember the story in The Realist, I think it was, Paul Krasner's publication, which more often than not was satire, about how Lady Bird Johnson was a partner in Bird Construction, which was building Air Force bases in Vietnam. And, you know, whether that was true or not, there was a hell of a lot of money being made building Air Force bases in Vietnam, and that money was being channeled back into Democratic and Republican politicians.
Yeah, well, you know, as it was said by Tom Lehrer, the satirist, when Henry Kissinger won the Nobel Peace Prize, you know, satire often becomes impossible, and that was an instance. Reality outpaces it. But I think it's fair to say, since the Johnson administration, the Democratic Party leadership has moved steadily rightward in terms of economic policy, no question, as you've documented for years on this program, and foreign policy. Been a warfare party for many decades, but the intelligence state now, the absolute contempt for the Bill of Rights.
Well, 70% of the NSA is outsourced. I mean, it seems to me that, you know, that we're talking really about Eisenhower's warning about the military-industrial complex.
Yes.
And when you take that concern and you marry it with or you know, pair it with the Supreme Court coming up with this doctrine, which never existed in American law, that corporations are persons, and more importantly, that money is not property, it's speech, then we have this ongoing slow-motion disaster. And I think that's really a cancer at the core of it. And I know your organization,
RootsAction.org. Yeah, I'd like to invite everybody listening to go to our website, to take action, to be part of our action arm. We now have 400,000 members. You can go to RootsAction.org.
Great. Norman Solomon. Thank you, Norman.
Thanks.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And also, Norman's website is normansolomon.com. We'll be right back. And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Corky in Hilton, New York, watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV. Hey, Corky, what's on your mind today?
Oh, Tom. Yeah, I watched the hearing for a couple hours, about as much as I could stomach.
Mm-hmm.
I agree that people have a right to know what's going on. Mm-hmm. But the problem was, she didn't get a chance to answer anything. They kept batting her with trying to draw blood. They give her an opportunity to speak, a conversation. As you talk, I talk, you talk. But they were just like lions at a feeding fest.
But wasn't...
You know, nobody...
I mean, I didn't watch the hearing, but traditionally in these kind of hearings, you get a Republican questioner, and then you get a Democratic questioner, and then you get a Republican questioner, and then you get a Democratic questioner. Didn't the Democrats give her an opportunity to say her piece?
Yeah, but the questions that the Democrats were asking, they already knew the answer to.
Right.
And the Republicans, they were coming. That one Republican says, well, I got my own insurance other than the health care I'm entitled to, and they threw me off. They sent me a letter.
Right.
Now, I think somebody ought to look at that, because I don't believe him for a second that he didn't take the government health care.
Yeah, this was Cory Gardner. He's the Republican from Colorado, and he waved around his cancellation letter and, to quote David Firestone over at the New York Times, demanded that Ms. Sebelius nullify the health law for all residents of his congressional district. Essentially, Corky, what these Republicans are demanding is that that we allow the insurance companies to continue to rip off customers, that we allow them to go back to bad policies. You know, I mean, these policies that people are being canceled right now are the equivalent in the mortgage business of the subprime loans. You know, they're exploding policies. They're policies where if you get sick, genuinely sick, they have the right to throw you off the policy and stop paying your bills. Where if you run up bills over a certain amount, they just stop paying. They say, okay, you've hit your cap of your lifetime limit. Their policies that they can change the terms and conditions anytime they want. Their policies where they can take 60, 70, 80% of the money as profit rather than just providing you with health services. And all of that has been outlawed by the Affordable Care Act, a.k.a. Obamacare. And Republicans are basically, I hope Americans get this, that when Republicans are saying, you know, hey, wait a minute, I'm being thrown off my policy, what they're really saying is we want the government to sanction the old way of doing this, which was the health insurance companies run the game, and it's a rigged game, and they will always win, and you will always lose.
Well, that's what they're doing. Nobody got any information from that hearing today at all.
Right. Well, it was political theater. It wasn't designed to convey information. I mean, I read the entire New York Times story on it, and basically all it said was that Kathleen Sebelius admitted that there were problems with the website and that she apologized. I mean, what more can she say?
Even the Fox Spy, you know, that program that's on,
Even
they criticized the Republicans for the way they acted today.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
That one girl who's, I forget her name, but she said yeah, they didn't give her a chance to answer. They standard procedure is talk over somebody.
Right.
Don't give them a chance to talk. Talk right. over them.
Right. Well, you know, I've had enough Republicans on this program try to debate me that, you know, that that's how they think they win, you know, is by, you know, not letting people have a say. Corky, thanks for the call, and thanks for the report from somebody who actually watched the committee. Great to hear from you. It's 20 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back. Hey, I want to know your take. So if you have a comment or question for our radio or TV show, grab your phone or turn on your computer, point the camera at your own face, hit record, and send your videos to yourtakemytake@gmail.com. Don't want to be seen on TV? Then leave a voice message on our rant line at 202-536-5306 and tune into The Big Picture every Thursday night for our Your Take, My Take live segment. 20 minutes past the hour. Tom Harbin here with you on the place where despair is not an option, the Tom Harbin program. We are raising money for the Hunter School and New England Salem Children's Village. HunterSchool.org is the website. The telephone number to make a donation is 800-897-8358. Just an FYI, 800-897-8358. We raised the question in the first hour of the program, actually, and it's kind of continuing to run through the show as a through line, although we've talked about a lot of different things. Congressman Jared Polis was here talking about marijuana decriminalization being basically the de facto position of the Democratic Party and what's it going to take to make it the explicit position of the Democratic Party. The whole uproar over the cancellation letters, all these other things. This max out of pocket, you know, somebody posting over on DU about, I got a health insurance policy that has no out-of-pocket expenses, has no co-pays, has no lifetime limit, and I pay $138 a month, period. And somebody said, what? There's no such thing. And then Gifford said, yeah, it's British Columbia. But the question that I was wondering, and I caught this last night, actually, the reference to this on Rachel Maddow's show, was that the guy who wants to be who wants to have Ken Cuccinelli's job. Ken Cuccinelli, you know, Mr. Ultrasound, Governor Ultrasound, the guy who you know, pushed the legislation forcing women who want to have an abortion to basically be raped with an ultrasound wand. That guy is running for governor. He's currently the attorney general, the chief law enforcement officer in the state. The guy who's running for his job, and I think his first name is Mark. Is that right, Jim? You're the Virginian here, Mark Obershane. He's a state senator. He's running for the AG job. He proposed legislation that would require a woman who has a miscarriage to report herself to the police within 24 hours or go to jail for a year. And, you know, I related the story of, you know, Louise and I had the experience of her having a miscarriage or are having a miscarriage. It's tough. It's a tough thing. It's tough on women. It's tough on families. It's emotionally draining. It's not the time that you want to be calling at the police department saying, hi, I'm calling to report to you that I just had a miscarriage. And why do these largely old white men want to shrink government down to the size where they can stick it in a woman's uterus? I mean, why are they so concerned? And I posited the theory that it has to do with a deep cultural sickness that goes back 6,000-7,000 years, and that I think that Len Schlein, who wrote The Alphabet Versus the Goddess, and Robert Ong, I think his name is, who wrote Oralcy Versus Literacy, that these guys were onto something, that when we started doing written language instead of oral traditions, that we fundamentally changed our brain wiring. And that was the beginning of patriarchy, misogyny, hierarchy. And there might be something to the idea that, as in Sweden, that we shouldn't teach children how to read abstract alphabets, how to be literate, until after the age of 7, because it causes a rewiring of the brain. And the left side of the brain takes over, which controls the right side of the body. And that's the kind of, you know, masculine dominator side, as it were. So, anyhow, there's a lot of theories out there, but I raised the question, and I see a number of people have some thoughts on that, as well as some of the other things that we've talked about. We had Robert Greenwald on talking about AmericasDroneWars.com, his website, and his new documentary that's out. You can see it for free over there. But Dana in Marcin, Idaho. Hey, Dana. Thanks for listening and watching.
Hey, Tom. Yeah, hi, Tom. How are you?
I am well. You had thoughts on politicians making laws against women.
Yes, I think as far as the people, the values voters, you may be right about why they want to suppress women and prevent women from getting, you know, they want to control their bodies. As far as the politicians, I don't know if you remember back when Bush lost the election, there was a man, and I think he was from the, family, one of those family values groups, Christian values, evangelist groups, and he was on Tom Hartman, and he was saying the Christians, the value voters, were really mad at the Republicans because they did nothing but talk about things.
You know, when Romney lost the election.
When back in Bush, before Obama got the first time, got elected.
Okay.
He was on Bill Maher, and he was saying how the Christian voters, the value voters, were mad at the Republicans because all they do is talk.
Right.
They don't.
Once they take power, they don't outlaw abortion, basically.
Exactly. And yeah. I think that was a whistle, a dog whistle, to the Republicans that they better. If they want their votes, they better start to perform and make actual laws and bills based on those values.
And thus we got Ken Cuccinelli with his mandatory ultrasound rape, and you get Mr. Obershain, Senator Obershain, with his, if you have a miscarriage, you must call the police department and turn yourself in.
Yeah, exactly. They need to get these people. They have to be motivated to come to the polls in the primary election.
Yeah, and you wonder, you know, in Texas has had a law in the books since 1974 that if a woman gets married, her driver's license has to have as her middle name her maiden name, whereas most women or many women, I have no idea if it's most or many, but whichever, many women don't use their maiden name. They use their middle name. I mean, I know my wife does. She uses, you know, Louise in her middle name and Hartman as her name on all her ID. But if she lived in Texas, her middle name would have to be her maiden name. And that would be different than her voter registration card. And so this is why Wendy Davis had a hard time voting day before yesterday in Texas. And it's like this bizarre war on women. Why only women? Why do these politicians, Dana, I think you're onto something. Thank you for the call, and thanks for watching the program. We'll be right there in Idaho. We'll be right back. It's 28 minutes past.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Check out Help Out, the Hunter School and the Salem Children's Village at salemchildrensvillage.org and hunterschool.org. Amazing. Absolutely amazing. Sometimes you read these threads. I was lost in this thread about on Democratic Underground about this Canadian healthcare and Americans talking to a Canadian saying, no, you've got to be making something up. I mean, this can't be the case. Right. Anyway, I just find the whole thing fascinating. Jack in Portland, Oregon. Hey, Jack, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom. Wow. I think these drone pilots should be charged with murder.
Well, these are people who joined the military, I believe, although I guess in the CIA's case, they signed up for a job. I think that the people who are telling them what to do should be charged with war crimes. But I don't think that, you know, when a soldier kills somebody in what they believe to be a battle. I'm sorry. I couldn't hear you, Jack.
Well, I'm sorry. I just said, you know, murder is murder. I don't know why you have to parse it out. Hey, listen.
Sure.
You're right about this stuff on, you're onto something here with this potato thing and tomatoes.
Right.
I've been doing a study of the psychochemistry of common things like that. And and it's not the Belladonna family. It's the Solanaceae family. But I think that a lot. I'm sorry.
Which is what?
The Solanaceae family: potatoes, nightshades, tomatoes, belladonna.
Right.
These are all part of the Solanaceae family.
Oh, okay. I thought that the nightshade.
Tetrastramonium.
Right. Okay.
You know that crazy drug that drives people nuts. I think it's having a profound effect on people. All this eating of these tomatoes and potatoes and stuff. I think it does have a tendency to drive people nuts.
Hmm.
And you're right. I think you're really honest on about the swelling of the joints. My mother had the same thing, and I wonder if that's
Well, I know about that. I don't know if the stuff makes me crazy. I think and probably you all are reasonable measures of that. I actually had, because you hear me for 3 hours every day, 5 days a week for what, 9 years now, going on 10 years, and I think I'm pretty predictable and stable day to day, week to week. I mean, you know, I haven't gone nuts, had a meltdown or anything that I know of. But if you look at my hand right now, it looks quite normal. But maybe 5 or 6 months ago, there was a period of time where the first three joints of my hand were just really, really swollen. And we had like 3 nights in a row eaten in an Italian restaurant where, you know, we had 3 different business meetings, and we went out and I was eating all this tomato sauce, and then my hand swelled up, and I thought, oh damn, I forgot, you know. And it's like, I've noticed that myself, and my, as I said, my mother noticed that, but I don't think it made me crazy. I think I was still fairly rational.
Okay.
But,
well, how do you think your shoulder's doing? You had a problem with.
Yeah. Tore a muscle in my left shoulder, and I can now lift my left arm about 4 inches.
Do you think that could be from a frozen shoulder? I had a frozen shoulder.
No, that's what I had. That's what I had.
Listen, let me tell you something. I've had 2 frozen shoulders now.
Me too.
And the second time I decided I was going to try to cure it with homeopathy, and I did.
What was the remedy?
Lycopodium.
Lycopodium?
Lycopodium. Yeah.
Lycopodium.
It just loosened up immediately. It was amazing.
Yeah, lycopodium is moss, isn't it?
Well, it's the spore from the club moss, yeah.
Yeah, the club moss, yeah. Yeah, very interesting. I studied homeopathy really intensely for about a year and a half and took a correspondence course from a UK university that, according to the internet is a diploma mill, but for me it was like a really good course in homeopathy. It's been a decade since I seriously was using homeopathic remedies. I'll have to check it out. But what happened with me, Jack, is I was, and this happened with my right shoulder the last time I wrote a book. And I think that it's a repetitive strain injury that works its way up into the muscles and just tears them up. And it was the supraspinatus, my right arm, 3 years ago. And then this time, as I was writing this book that's coming out next week, actually, over the course of a year, I mean, just typing for hours and hours a day and on weekends, sometimes typing for 10 or 12 hours a day, that, my left arm just went out, you know, and they did an MRI and said, it's your infraspinatus this time that's all torn up, but it really hurt when I typed. And I think that frozen shoulder is the body's way of locking it down while those little tiny muscles in the shoulder joint have an opportunity to heal themselves. So I just went through it, you know, just, pushed through the period. There was a period of a few weeks there where I was taking some codeine occasionally, you know, to get to sleep as a painkiller, but that was about it. The first time I tried the steroid shot, my whole body went nuts. I mean, my body just melted down. It was not a good idea. So, you know, on my right shoulder, but my left shoulder is getting better. I can lift my arm just about about 4 inches away from my body now. And it doesn't screaming hurt constantly, whereas my right arm is now normal, 3 years later. So, anyhow, Jack, I got to move along. But thanks for the call. It's interesting. I'll check that out. Don, I have an old homeopathic kit at home someplace. I don't know if it's on the boat. It might be in storage. I know I had lycopodium. Don in Klawock, Alaska. Hey, Don, what's up?
Hey, Tom, glad to be on your show.
Thank you for watching.
Yeah, I've been waiting for a while. But anyway, something on radio today, PBS radio, they're studying the flyways of the sandhill cranes going through Gustavus, Alaska. And they had fish and game people, biologists, all kinds of people studying it, and they drew up a plan. And what they got back from the Parnell administration is just, well, we'll just forget all this. And furthermore, we're going to make it just about impossible for anybody that has any kind of opposition to drilling and things like that, just make it harder and harder to get into it. So, like the Shell thing that's going for drilling in the Arctic, they had trouble in Bellingham Bay, they had trouble in Dutch Harbor, and finally the thing went aground. You know, you're talking about the Gulf of Mexico. The Gulf of Mexico has things called highways and airports and everything else, mm-hmm. ready access. The Arctic, if they ever drilled up there, I mean, forget it.
Yeah.
And the disbursements that they put over the oil in the Gulf of Mexico was obvious to me why they did it. They didn't want the oil on the beach at,
sure.
like in...
they did it to hide the crime, to hide the evidence of the crime.
Well, it's still there, and it's on the bottom, and I've heard that the disbursements were three times as lethal as everything. I really have a lot of sympathy for the people in that area, because after Exxon Valdez, it went 20 years, and then finally got to the Supreme Court. They just said, oh, well, that's okay, and we'll just forget it, you know, more or less.
Yeah.
The people in the Gulf of Mexico have just begun their grief. It's going to drag on and on and on, and no regard for the little guy. The damage to the, you know, the bottom, all of the shrimp and everything else on the bottom, forget it. I really have a lot of sympathy for those people.
I'm with you, Don. And now we've got people who are coughing up blood and people who have lesions and sores and things, you know, apparently from the Corexit or the oil or both, or... You know, nobody's really sure, but it's, you know, the epidemiology down there is starting to look really scary. And, it's bad stuff. Don, thank you for the call. And thanks for watching us up in Alaska. Mike, listening on WCPT in Morton Grove, Illinois. Hey, Mike, what's up?
Hey, how you doing, Tom? Yeah. I heard you were talking about your mom, about the arthritis and all that. I knew about eggplant and tomato. Potato I didn't know about. And what was the fourth item that you listed?
Peppers.
I didn't quite get it.
Peppers.
Oh, peppers.
Yeah, if you look at the plants, they all look the same. And if you look at deadly nightshade, that plant looks like them, although we don't eat the fruit of the deadly nightshade. But deadly nightshade contains high levels of belladonna, and they used to make an extract out of it. And belladonna causes your muscles to relax just profoundly. And so you'd put a little drop of belladonna on the eyes back, you know, 1,000 years ago, and it would cause the pupil to dilate, which would make your pupil really large and dark. And that was considered a sign of beauty. And so women used to use this, and thus the name belladonna, which is Bella is beautiful, Donna is woman. And, or maybe it's the other way around. And, but it's in very, very low. Belladonna, scopolamine, and atropine, as I recall, are the primary chemicals that you find in that family of plants. Although I don't think that it's any of those things that causes the arthritis. And if you search on the internet on this stuff, you'll find there's lots and lots of people out there. I don't think it's all arthritis. I don't even think it's, you know, like 20%. It's a small subset. But I think that there's a genetic vulnerability to plants in that family. And somebody else called earlier and said there's a larger name for the family. I'm sorry I didn't catch it exactly, so I can't say it. But I always thought of them as the nightshade family of plants. That's, peppers, green peppers, red peppers, all kinds of peppers. Eggplants, tomatoes, and potatoes, because the leaves and stems and stuff all look the same. Have you tried it? Have you had that experience with that?
No, my mom did. When she passed away like 6 years ago, and she used to tell me about eggplants and the tomatoes and a little bit of what you were talking about.
That they would cause arthritis for her?
Right, and also not only about the arthritis, but also there was something else about eggplants, too, that she was talking about with the thyroid even, that I really don't remember anymore, and I wish I did so I could tell you about it. But,
yeah,
so you just brought back a lot of memories, and I didn't get the fourth item, the peppers, so that's the reason why I called.
Yeah, yeah. Well, if anybody's ever tried it out, you know, let us know. I'm curious to know how limited, and thank you, Mike, for the call, how limited or unique my and my mother's experience might be, that those four plants, those four foods, which are overrepresented in our diet, particularly tomatoes, because you find tomato sauce, tomato paste, and so many things, could be causing physical health problems. It's interesting. Anyhow, 15 minutes before you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And we're fundraising for Hunter School, 800-897-8358, or hunterschool.org. Welcome back. And whoops, I'm using the wrong mouse here. Let's see. Brian in Dunkirk, Indiana, watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV. What's on your mind, Brian?
Yeah, hey, Tom. 2 points, so I'll try to be real quick.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to legalization, I think would actually seriously curb... Yes, of mm-hmm. pot. Seriously curb the criminal element, and I think would actually make it harder for minors or kids to get their hands on it. And two, in my experience, the drug war has failed because I come from a very small town in a completely rural county, and from the ages of 15 to 45, I've never had to go a week without being able to find pot on the street.
Yeah, and I think
I had a harder time getting alcohol, though.
That's interesting.
You know, at the ages of like 15, 16, 17, I had a harder time getting alcohol than I did pot. So I think if you was to take and regulate pot and put it behind a liquor store or dispensary,
yeah,
whatever, I think you'd have the same effect.
I think you're right. And the experience of California when they legalized medical marijuana, which made ultimately marijuana very widely available because you can get medical marijuana in many parts of California for like a headache, you know, for insomnia. It is so widespread, so easily available in so many places that the use by kids did not actually go up. And that alcohol use and alcohol deaths in particular actually went down among adults. And that's a good thing. So frankly, I think that we should do what Portugal did, which is they decriminalized all drugs. They said all drugs are not issues to be dealt with by the police. They are issues to be dealt with hospitals and doctors. So all drugs are legal or at least are not. They're not legal like you can sell them over the counter. You can't sell them. But all drugs are no drugs. Nobody's going to be prosecuted for drug offenses. And we're going to take the money that we would have used for that and we're going to put it into drug treatment centers. And it basically broke the back of organized crime, and it solved a lot of the addiction problem that they had. Now, that's not to say that some people aren't going to continue to be addicts. They have their problem with alcohol. But, you know, and that's an issue of probably biology and neurology and genetics and all these kind of things. There's always going to be that percentage of people who are inclined to, you know, to want to get to alter their consciousness. I'm on the edge of being one of them, certainly. But I think that I came very close to that in my life, let's say, on a number of occasions. But I think that if we simply decriminalized all of it, it would do us a whole lot better. Brian, thank you for the call, and thanks for sharing your story. Judy in Rome, Georgia, we have a minute to the break. Hey, Judy.
Hi. I was just calling about, you know, we're getting so close to having the first woman president. It's like they're saying, how dare she? She will not have veto power over us.
And, you're talking about all the trashing Hillary that's going on in Daryl Issa's committee,
yeah,
and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and then also, like a lot of times, like if a woman, you know, she works her way up through a corporation, they'll say, well, you know, she slept her way to the top. Well, they'll probably be saying that, you know, she had to sleep her way across the country to get all the votes.
Yeah.
And I mean, that may be a little, you know.
Well, the story they would tell about Hillary is that in a way she did sleep her way to the top because her husband was president first. And, you know, that's a sad commentary on American politics, that there's probably some truth to that. That catapulted her into the national politics. Obviously, it's stupid to say she slept her way to the top, but that, you know, we have, I think, 16% of the people who are in Congress right now are female. That should be a disgrace to this country. Judy, thank you for the call, and thanks for your comment. We'll be back. Welcome back. Tom Harbin here with you. I'm still wondering why somebody like Senator Mark Obershane, who is running to replace Ken Cuccinelli as the Attorney General of the state of Virginia, the Republican, why he would sponsor legislation that says that if you're female and you have a miscarriage, you must report yourself to the police within 24 hours or go to prison for a year. Pamela in Seattle, listening on KBCS, you have some thoughts on this?
I do. First, I want to say I've become a monthly donor to Hunter School.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for caring about kids.
Thank you very much.
And I call these types of people, and I know quite a bit about them because I was born in a red state and I was born an ultra liberal. So they tried to change me my whole life.
Mm-hmm.
But I call them the American Taliban.
I think that's an appropriate appellation, an appropriate name.
It is. it's very scary to me to watch them do this and have people not really understand what they're trying to get us to and take us from. And I think it's really important that women learn the history of how they've been treated and the roller coaster ride we've been on, and you know, get over this, I don't know what really to call it, constant being drugged down instead of lifted up.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I did get that book. I haven't read it yet, but I got the book, The Goddess and the Alphabet. The Alphabet and the Goddess.
The Alphabet versus the Goddess by Leonard Schlein.
Yes, yes.
It's absolutely brilliant.
I really wanted to read that.
Yeah, I think you will find it to be just an extraordinary book. And, yeah. This is, you know, the stuff that you're talking about, the history, what people don't know. This is from my book, Unequal Protection. Page 51. This was at the time of the signing of the Constitution. A married woman was not allowed to make out a will because she was not allowed to own land or legally control anything else worthy of willing to another person. Any property a woman brought into the marriage became her husband's at the moment of marriage and would revert to her only if he died and she did not remarry. But even then, she would only get one third of her husband's property, and what third that was and how she could use it were determined by a male court-appointed executor who would supervise her for the rest of her life or until she remarried and determine how she used that third of her husband's estate that she inherited. When a widow died, the executor would either take the property for himself or decide to whom it would pass. The woman had no say in the matter because she had no right to sign a will. Women could not sue in a court of law except under the same procedures allowed for the mentally ill and children supervised by men. If the man of a family household died, the executor would decide who would raise the wife's children and in what religion. She had no right to make those decisions and no say in such matters. If the woman was poor, it was a virtual certainty that her children would be taken from her. And it was impossible in the United States of America for a married woman to have legal responsibility for her children, control of her own property, buy or sell land, or even obtain an ordinary license. We've come a long way, Pamela.
Yeah. I just hope we don't slide back.
Well, it seems like that's the world that these guys want to take us back to. That was a time when women not only couldn't vote, but couldn't own property, basically had no rights. They were the property of men. And I think Oberschein's attempted legislation and Ken Cuccinelli's, ultrasound rape legislation that he successfully passed, I believe, is taking us in that direction. Pamela, thank you for the call. James in Broadwater, Nebraska. Hey, James, what's up?
Oh, hello. I was listening to you on the car radio on my way home, but now I'm in my house and listening to you on the Internet.
Okay.
I was calling because you were discussing earlier some of the apparent properties of deadly nightshade to cause connective tissue disorders such as arthritis.
Right.
Well, there are direct studies available. Double-blind scientific studies available about the problems of the alkaloids in deadly nightshade causing connective tissue disorders. One of those in particular is one that I have. I have epilepsy.
Uh-huh.
I was put out of the Navy because of it, and the Navy had gone through a number of different epileptic medications trying to find one that would control my seizures, and they could not find one. And fell back on the good old ancient phenobarbital.
Right. Yeah,
phenobarbital was directly derived from, originally was directly derived from deadly nightshade. Now it's synthesized. But,
really?
But the problem with phenobarbital is that in certain persons that have a genetic predisposition to it, there is a disease called Dupuytren's disease. It's a connective tissue disorder in elderly people.
Is this Dupuytren's contraction, where the hand turns into a claw, basically?
Your hands turn into claws.
Right.
And in really extreme cases, your feet will, too. And I started developing the disorder in my early 40s.
Whoa.
And it's directly tied to the phenobarbital medication I take. I'm now 53. In that time, I've had four surgeries. I'm recovering from the latest surgery on my left hand that the Veterans Administration just accomplished.
Have you found that the nightshade family plants, you know, tomatoes, potatoes, peppers, and eggplant affect you also? Or have you not tried
eggplants? So
pardon?
I won't touch an eggplant. But
yeah.
But as far as potatoes and tomatoes, I happen to like them. But I don't know that I don't have any direct evidence that they cause the problem.
Yeah.
But they all contain all those plants contain those alkaloids.
Right. Right.
The phenobarbital tablets are just a concentrated form of the same alkaloid. And as I point out, since only 4 or 5 years now, I've had 4 surgeries on both my hands.
Wow.
And I'm in the process of recovering from one on my left hand. I just had some 40 stitches removed last week.
Wow. It would be really interesting to have somebody with that condition try an elimination diet and take the nightshade foods out of their diet and see if they got better. Because, you know, like I said, with my hand, I thought maybe it was Dupratrin's because it was starting to, you know, I was getting these lumps in my joints and things. And then, but they went away when I stopped eating those foods. James, thanks for the call. That's scary stuff. Coming up tomorrow, speaking of very scary stuff, a spook fest to remember with tricks. The right keeps raving about Medicare's missing $700 million. We're going to get to the bottom of that with Wendell Potter. And treats to healthcare success story with Elliot Richardson, CEO of Chicago's Small Business Advocacy Council, and Peter Schweitzer, the new book, Extortion. And please help out Hunter School, hunterschool.org. Tag yours.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to tomhartman.com.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. EdisonFactor.com. Edison Factor is a supplement for the brain. More information at EdisonFactor.com. SolarWorld.com. SolarWorld has a 35-year history in the manufacturing of solar in America. More information at SolarWorld.com. Carbonite.com. Automatic online backup and file recovery. More information at Carbonite.com. AngiesList.com. Detailed reviews on roofers, plumbers, house cleaners, dentists, and more. More information at AngiesList.com. Stamps.com. Postage online from your computer. More information at Stamps.com. And our website, TomHartman.com. You support our programs, and please help by supporting the people who help make this program possible. There are links to all of our underwriters at TomHartman.com. Thank you.